Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. All right, listeners, this is a juicy episode. It runs a little long. Hopefully you're up for it. I can't wait for you to join me and to hear all this great information on your pelvic floor. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so excited to be talking with you today and be talking with Amy Cooper about pelvic floor health. Now, you may have listened to episode 23, Let's Talk About Sex with Dr. Trina Reed. And if you haven't, go listen to it. But she mentioned talking about the importance of exercising our muscles down there. And so I really want to just kind of delve into that topic a little bit more, because a lot of us don't really know a lot about our pelvic floor and also how our core and our pelvic floor has been impacted by having kids. So today I'm talking with Amy Cooper. She is a certified personal trainer and a pre and postnatal fitness specialist. She's done specific training with a technique called hypopressives. She's a yoga teacher, a doula, and a mom. So she is, she really brings her passion about fitness to really supporting women, and with your own experience as a mom of two kids, you can really your help with women to get a sense of what's going on there and what to work on is really personal too. So thanks so much for joining me today, Amy.
It's so nice to be here.
Let's just jump in and talk about how having kids has impacted our core muscles and our pelvic floor muscles.
You bet. So first, I just want to give a bit of a disclaimer that having children doesn't mean you're going to have pelvic health struggles. And not having children also doesn't mean that you won't have pelvic floor struggles. So having children definitely will reveal things about your body, and it will do it very quickly. But it's not the thing. It's not the be-all, end-all of pelvic health. But it is a very transformative event on the body and very intimately related to our pelvises. So when people carry pregnancies and have children, a lot of things are going on. Hormones are happening. Physical and physiological changes are happening. Childbirth may eventually happen. So all of these things are really transformative on the entire body, including the pelvic floor, and especially the pelvic floor. And that is a time when, because things change so quickly, and because they can be very physically difficult and at times physically traumatic, it will reveal things about your pelvic health to you. It may also reveal that your pelvic health was great. And for those women, amazing. And, you know, that's great too, but I would encourage everyone to always continue to attend to their pelvic health and get to know their bodies, even when red flags are not coming, because pelvic health is something we need to cherish lifelong and support lifelong. So certainly the act of carrying a baby puts a lot of downward pressure on the body, changes the hormones. We're, you know, getting a lot of relaxin at that time. So it really does sort of loosen up the structures of our body and change their resting tension, change their integrity. And then you're adding all of these pressures from inside the body. And all of that can lead to ultimately, pelvic floor dysfunction or problems with your pelvic floor or changes in your pelvic floor. And the more we get to know those and are educated about our bodies, the more we will understand when we need help, how to help ourselves, and where to go and what to say and what the red flags might be and what they might mean. So for sure, it's also, I think that we definitely need to honor the process in the transformation of childbirth. And I really just want to say, I flat out reject the notion of bouncing back. And I flat out reject the notion that our body after babies needs to look like it didn't.
Oh, I love that.
It is a transformative event. It will leave a mark on your body. Yeah. It is a badge of honor. We should honor it. But when it impacts the way you feel and function, then we should feel free to address that and be free to address that. So knowing where to go, making resources available to most women, or even just a podcast like this, where maybe I will say something that even if a listener does not have access to a pelvic floor physiotherapist, maybe something I say will be the thing they needed. So yeah. So childbirth, it's transformative in every way. We need to honor that. We need to allow the transformation to happen. But at the same time, we need to know that if that transformation comes with red flags that might impact function and health, that we need to give people the guidance and the confidence to go and get that addressed without shame, without embarrassment, and, you know, and not make this something that only a few people are privileged enough to afford or have access to. So yeah, that's my feeling on how motherhood transforms the pelvic floor.
That's so great. And I'm so glad you mentioned that point of, like, you know, that women don't have to have kids in order to have issues with their pelvic floor. And I wasn't sure whether I was going to share this, and I might as well just, you know, put it out there. Before having Frankie, I did a lot of Bollywood dancing, and which is really, I love dancing, and Bollywood was just so much fun. The music and the costumes and everything was just so great. I danced with just a really wonderful group of women here in Calgary. And there was one time where we were actually performing, and I got up on stage and started dancing and actually experienced like a leak, like a little bit of pee leaked out.
And I was shocked.
I was shocked because I hadn't had kids, and it was like, what is going on? And it was really interesting because I had actually had registered in a seminar on pelvic floor health, kind of, you know, related to naturopathic doctors. So I was like, oh, perfect. I need to learn more about this because obviously something's going on. But not all women, you know, are going to be, you know, registering in seminars, and they may have a little bit of leak of urine before having kids or after having kids, and be confused or just be freaked out or just think it's something that they have to accept.
Exactly. And what we know from looking at different studies is we know that young female athletes are at a high risk for incontinence, for stress incontinence. We know that young female distance runners, if you do a thorough examination, you're going to find a small degree of mild pelvic organ prolapse in those women. So we know that a lot of things impact the pelvic floor. It is not just childbirth. And it also doesn't matter how you gave birth. So whether you had a cesarean birth or a vaginal birth does not matter all that much. The numbers do change a bit in terms of the risk factors in those groups, but a cesarean birth does not protect you against pelvic floor dysfunction. And a vaginal birth does not guarantee that you will have pelvic floor dysfunction. And there, I have worked with a lot of women who, you know, had never carried or birthed a child who were still having some degree of pelvic floor dysfunction. Dancers, ballerinas are high risk. Equestrian women are at high risk. So gymnasts are at high risk. So there are all kinds of impacts on the pelvic floor through all kinds of activities, not just childbearing. And I think that's important so that people understand that just because you maybe have not had a vaginal birth or just because you haven't, you know, carried a pregnancy does not mean that you shouldn't be aware of your pelvic health. Be on the lookout and understand what to look for in terms of red flags and be able to access care. It's not just about prenatal and postpartum. It's about women's health. That's and, awesome. You know, for that fact, there are a lot of men that have pelvic floor dysfunction. What do you think an inguinal hernia is, right? So there's a whole lot going on there as well. And so this is, it's not gendered and it's not specifically related to motherhood either.
I'm so glad you said that. And so now I'm wondering, of course, I'm wondering what with you said, you know, equestrian riders and runners and gymnasts being higher risk for pelvic floor dysfunction. Why is that?
Well, you know, I'm sure it's a very dynamic system. And when I say that those particular groups are at higher risk, it's more sort of clinical observations that have been passed down. So I'm actually not going to speak to specific mm-hmm. evidence or studies around those, but yeah. they're sort of groups that I've heard repeatedly referred to when I have those conversations in the pelvic health world. Yeah. And I think one of the best hypotheses that we have is that those are groups that have a lot of recruitment and over-recruitment and a lot of strengthening and gripping happening in their pelvic floors. So in terms of, say, women that ride horses, there is a lot of recruitment of the adductors. They are squeezing those inner thighs a lot. And we do know that those adductors are highly related to how the pelvic muscles function. And if they are in a sort of hypertense state or an overly recruited state, those muscles are less able to relax. And the relaxation is as important as the strength of a contraction in terms of pelvic function. It's a system that needs to work in all ways, right? So gymnasts, ballet dancers could, you know, be because of specific postures, training, muscle recruitment patterns. Runners, it's repeated impact, right? And that impact is going to leave a mark. Now, when I say that young female runners, if you look, will have some degree of mild pelvic organ prolapse, what I'm not saying is that that's a problem. Right. You know, they might feel and have no functional or sensational impact from that at all. But we do know that it's likely related to the constant impact of their running on their body. So, you know, it's not to say that these high-risk groups are going to have pelvic floor dysfunction, but I'm never surprised when I get a former ballerina in my gym.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, and it has to do with tension. And I think that when you carry tension in your pelvic floor, you're not functioning optimally. Yeah.
So what you're saying is, you know, just because a woman may have done a lot of running when she was younger and has, you know, maybe a very mild degree of uterine prolapse, it doesn't mean that she's going to be like leaking pee or having incontinence or any issues that way or any issues having sex or things don't necessarily feel different. It's just the like things have shifted a little bit.
Totally. So yeah. What I'm saying is that how we use our body impacts how our body functions and is, right?
Yeah.
Our bodies are a product of how we move. And when you move in that way, the ways that we move repeatedly and in a sustained fashion are going to leave an impact physiologically. And for some women, those patterns of movement may generate downward pressure. They may generate high impact on the pelvic organs. They may generate tension patterns in the muscular systems in and around the pelvic floor. And so that may or may not be a problem. Right? Just because we find pelvic organ prolapse in a woman does not mean that it's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't. And I think pelvic organ prolapse in particular can be quite alarming when people read about it or learn about it. But it is a very natural thing to happen to our bodies. My boobs are not as high as they used to be.
What?
My bladder is not as high as it used to be, right? And that's aging and life and that's movement, and that's childbearing, and it's all of the things that have happened to my body. Now, when we're talking about pelvic floor dysfunction, we want to know, how is this woman functioning with this body as it is? Is she feeling good and feeling functional and able to do everything she wants to do, be it movement, sex, anything, right? And if the answer is that woman is feeling and functioning well, then there you go. That's the answer, right? Yeah. So pelvic floor dysfunction is funny because what we do know is that symptoms and experiences are not that well correlated with the anatomical presentation. So with the example of pelvic organ prolapse, you can have a woman with very mild prolapse who feels that very strongly. And I have had women walk into my gym with very advanced pelvic organ prolapse who are unbothered by it. And both are okay. Those are individual experiences that we have to honor, but the anatomy does not necessarily correlate to the sensations and the functional experience of the person. And so you have to honor whatever it is that you're feeling and honor whatever it is that you are experiencing. And don't let people tell you, oh, well, you shouldn't be feeling this. I don't understand why you are. I can't find any reason for you to be feeling this, right? We need to think beyond that and treat the woman and the whole woman. And if she is not feeling or functioning as she wants to, she should have access to care.
I think that's so important for women to know that for sure. And, you know, I've definitely heard from a number of women where, they've had kids and then they've said, you know, if I would have known, what was going to happen or what was really going on with my body, I wouldn't have just, you know, picked up running again or, mm-hmm. or done that. So I don't know what your views on running post kids or even, while pregnant too, your thoughts on that. And I don't know if I'm just biased because, I really don't like to run. So I want all excuses to not run.
Yeah, I can definitely speak to that. So what we do know is, and I want to throw this out there, and this comes from a really wonderful pelvic health specialist in the United States called Dr. Sarah Ellis Duvall. And she said in some of the training I was doing with her that we don't run to get fit. We get fit so we can run. So running is a very dynamic and very powerful movement that involves a lot of stuff. It's cardiovascular. It also has a lot of anaerobic strength involved, strength and power. It has a lot of endurance. It recruits lots of different muscle fibers. It is a whole body movement. And because of the repeated impact on the ground to the whole body, if something up and down your chain of your body is not functioning well, you're going to see it when you're running. So I want you to not think of running as this thing that you can do to get fit. I want you to think about exercising your body and strengthening it so that when you do run, you can do that pain and symptom free. So we do know though that running does put quite, it is a high impact sport. So there is repetitive strain and repetitive pounding put on the pelvic floor. And in a person who has just given birth or is pregnant, we've got relaxin in your system that are changing the way that hormones impact your tissues. We are changing the integrity of the support structures around your joints, in your soft tissue. We are changing the resting tone of your body, and that's going to possibly put you at higher risk of certain injuries or things happening. So when it comes to running, if someone has been a lifelong runner and they have muscle memory happening that is so ingrained in their physical systems, I'm going to be a lot less concerned than somebody who is just wanting to begin running postpartum. There are also a lot of factors around, are you breastfeeding? because breastfeeding does extend some of the hormonal activity on the body, and it can extend that vulnerable time when your tissues are impacted non-optimally by some of the hormonal action of childbearing. So, you know, for example, if I have a woman who has run many marathons as a lifelong runner, she is pain and symptom free and functioning well, running well in pregnancy, I'm unlikely to tell her to stop. I'm also unlikely to tell her that she can't return to running postpartum as long as she understands herself and what red flags to look for and can do a conservative program and self-monitor as she goes. Now, a woman that wants to come to running immediately postpartum, I'm going to express a lot more caution and just encourage her to take the steps very slowly. So I'm going to encourage her to start with walking and see how that feels. And then once she is walking well, I'm going to ask her to bring in some strength training, because of course we need to get fit so that we can run. And there's a lot of muscle work happening there. So if we've got a good walking program and we've got a good strength building program and we are pain and symptom free, then I would say, okay, now let's look at the risks. Are you still breastfeeding? Do you have anything in your body that you are still working on around your pelvic health that it might be best to address first? And if the answer is no, then I would say, okay, so now we start to maybe do a few intervals of running in that walking program and stop and see how it feels, right? Take the next day, take the day after that, take the day after that. Look for red flags. Give your body time to settle into this new program and see how it responds. If we are still pain and symptom free, then we begin to progress. If we get pain or symptoms or red flags, then we back off. We work on rebuilding again, and then we try again later. So I'm never going to advise a woman not to run if she wants to run. But I might give her some advice around exercising caution and things she might not yet know about how to self-monitor her own body during the process of returning to running. And maybe that's letting her in on some red flags that she might not recognize as red flags, right?
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about what that self-monitoring would look like and what those red flags are?
For sure.
Yeah.
So I was taught by the wonderful pelvic health specialists and physiotherapists that I work with that there is sort of, the one I love is the rule of three P's. And sometimes it's sort of extended to the rule of four P's. And you'll see why, because we kind of lump a few of those in together. But the rule of three P's is an easy way to remember changes in peeing, pooping, or passing gas, changes in pain, and changes in pressure. So what we are looking for there, and these red flags apply whether you are starting a new exercise or movement program, whether you are in a new stage of life, whether nothing has changed at all. Right now we are in a sort of lockdown. The yep. anxiety over coronavirus has changed the baseline of anxiety. I feel, you know, your at-home life has changed. The world has changed. And maybe that change in stress level is enough that you should be looking at the three P's. So the three P's: peeing, pooping, and passing gas. Is there any change or are you getting any red flags? That might include peeing, pooping, or passing gas when you don't intend to. So leaking, that could even be leaking of flatulence or air, right? So I had a girlfriend who loved CrossFit, and as she was getting into CrossFit, she said, man, I just every time I do this movement, I pass gas and I can't not do it. And she thought that she was telling me a very funny story. And I agreed. She told it with gusto. It was hilarious. But when she was done, I said, be a little careful with that, right? So the most common presentation, obviously, in a lot of women is that idea that after babies or during pregnancy, that leaking, having a sneeze pee, laugh pee, jump pee, that leaking is somewhat normal. Mm-hmm. It is a really common experience, but it is an experience that we can address. And I encourage people not to simply like lean into it. I encourage people to say, okay, this is not abnormal. This is a common experience, but I am empowered to do something about that. So we are looking for any changes in those three things, peeing, pooping, and passing gas. That might be more urgency. That might be the key in the door phenomena where you don't think you have to go that badly until your key is in the door and suddenly it's an emergency, right? Mm-hmm. My classic example is I thought I had to pee, not so much, and suddenly my pants are very complicated, right? Like yeah. Common
struggle,
common
struggle,
experience.
Struggle.
It could mean leaking during any kind of physical stress on the body. So jumping, running, laughing, sneezing, coughing, all of these things. It could also mean leaking during sexual activity. It could also mean passive leaking. So some women might leak urine just with a change in physical posture, getting up and down out of a chair, out of a squat, something like that. Another really common occurrence is a change in the way or the nature of your, say, urine stream. So you used to be able to void your bladder in this amount of time and there was a certain volume to the pee stream and now suddenly it's a trickle or suddenly it's a gusher. So changes like that, also changes that you should just be attuned to, right? So any change to peeing, pooping, and passing gas. Next up is pain. Any change to pain. We are especially looking for any pain in and around the pelvis and hips. But really, I'm looking at pain anywhere between, say, the knee and the shoulder. And I could probably even extend that, but you can't, right? There's got to be a limit. So this definitely one of the more common occurrences is low back pain, tailbone pain. If you are returning to a menstrual cycle, a definite change in the way you experience pain during that cycle, any difference in cramping. And a huge one that a lot of women don't talk about is pain during sexual activity of any kind. So this could be pain related to orgasm, pain related to penetration, pain related to self-stimulation or stimulation, pain in the vulva with touch, pain in the vulva without touch. So it could be any of those things. Then next is changes in the pressure systems of the body. So here is where we're looking at the way downward pressure is impacting your pelvic floor. And that P can be sort of pressure or prolapse. So are you feeling in your body like something is out of place? In your pelvis, do you feel heavy or draggy? Do you feel like there's a bulge? Do you feel like you're sitting on a grape? Do you feel like you see some tissue or you see some bulging that is unusual to you when you look with a hand mirror at your own vulva? So can you see something? Are you feeling something? If you put your fingers up inside your body, are you feeling something different? So are you feeling a change in where your uterus is? Are you feeling a bulge where your bladder is impacting the vaginal wall? Are you feeling something like that? Are you feeling that after a bowel movement, you're really struggling with the downward pressure that generated? So any change to the pressure systems of the body and clues that are associated with that. So those are the three P's as I see them. And if you are beginning to look at a new movement practice or a new circumstance in your life, or just suddenly you are getting some of these red flags, you need to be a bit of a scientist for yourself. If you get them right after you just started running again, you can think, okay, there's a good chance it might be that new movement on the body. Are you getting it because your family is moving and you've been lifting a lot of heavy boxes and the stress level is high, right? Is there a global pandemic and you're getting less sleep? Has something hormonally changed? Are you perimenopausal or menopausal? Are you returning to fertile hormone status after postpartum status, right? Have you just stopped breastfeeding? Have you just started breastfeeding? So it's a lot of things involved, and you have to sort of know what to look for. You have to train your mind to go, I should think about that. And then you have to start noticing the things around you that might have had that impact. And then you have to play with them and see if you can make that red flag go away, or if something makes that red flag worse. And then you have to go and seek help. So that's my, if you return to running, by all means, but you want to be pain-free and symptom-free. And by symptom-free, I definitely mean that you're not getting any red flags.
I love the breakdown of the three P's. Like, that's especially, you know, the P, and you think about P anyway, it just fits in my mind. Right. So if any woman is having any of the three P's, you know, again, probably a lot of women are like, okay, then what do I do? And it's so funny that we've talked all this time about pelvic floor and haven't mentioned Kegels. Or now, do you pronounce it Kegels or do you pronounce it Kegels?
You know what? Both are correct. I've heard both.
Yeah.
I'm a Kegler, but I fully appreciate the Kegel community. So we can just use them interchangeably.
Perfect. So now
I'll also often just take Kegel out of it because I'm more than a bit of a feminist, and I don't really like things that are named after men. So
good call.
Which is everything, right?
Yeah.
So I will often just call them pelvic floor contractions.
Nice.
And leave it at that.
Nice.
So Kegels.
Kegels
are one piece of what should be a very comprehensive program in support of pelvic health. I think they're important. I'm a big fan. I recognize that they're not appropriate for everybody all the time. For me, I like to put movement in this big basket, and just I like to have at it, right? It's a banquet that everybody should be able to dig into. So I don't ever say that there are movements that are off limits for anybody, but there are definitely some movements or exercises that I put in the category of not yet, right? Or not now, but maybe later. Kegels are one of those things. They're great. I want everybody to be able to do one. Should everybody do one right now? Maybe not. But I reject the notion that an isolated contraction of a muscle group that works as part of a system is going to fix the system.
It's kind of a reductionist kind of idea.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. The pelvic floor, as we've sort of talked about it, is sort of intimately connected to a lot of other things. It's connected to our emotional and hormonal states. And physiologically, it's a part of your core system, which is an incredibly complex and dynamic system that encompasses a lot of different muscles and is impacted by a lot of different adjacent muscle groups as well. What we do with our feet can have a direct impact on our pelvic floors. So we have to think of the body holistically. While I think that Kegels are very important, and I especially want all people to know how to do them correctly, a program addressing certain issues that only involves Kegels is not going to tackle the systemic health of the whole person, right? So yay for Kegels. For some people, they're a not yet. And for everybody, they should be a not only, right?
So how would a woman know if it's a not yet?
So when you embark on a Kegel program, that's an exercise program. Mm. If you've started to do Kegels, are you getting any of the three P's? Mm. Right?
Back to the three P's.
It always comes back to the three P's. And if anybody listening learns one thing today, it's learn to look for your three P's, right? And, you know, if I need to bring that down even more, just think pain-free, symptom-free. So if I start a Kegel program, maybe I have listened to Trina Reed and she was like, yay for Kegels, mm-hmm. which I agree, right? Mm-hmm. Because they are good for so many reasons, but maybe you start on that aggressive Kegel program and now suddenly every time you put that key in the door, your "oh, I could pee" becomes an "oh my God, I think I'm going to pee right now," right? You've developed an urgency, or you've developed a leak, or you've developed some other red flag. Maybe you've developed tailbone pain or vulvar pain or pain during sex. Maybe what you need is not continual contraction of the pelvic floor. Maybe what you need is continual, more effective release of the pelvic floor, right? So they're not going to be for everybody all the time right now. And you're always going to look back to the three P's. So can you Kegel in a way that you feel is effective? And can you do that pain and symptom free? If the answer is yes, by all means, do them. They're great. I know, as Trina probably explained, not only are they building up the muscle bellies in and around your pelvis and your vagina, but they are also directing blood flow. They are increasing, you know, lubrication. They are sort of just bringing the whole body's attention to the pelvic floor and to your pelvic area in a way that can be so good. Right?
Awesome.
But if you're getting red flags, back off the Kegels if that was your new movement.
Totally. And I'm so curious about when you said, you know, focusing on that release. Can you speak a little bit more about that release? And I mean, especially with stress and tension,
yes,
and you know, being in a pandemic and stress increased, how can we release more? How, you know, are there ways to really focus on getting that release so it's not just a, you know, constant contraction of the muscles?
There are, absolutely. So whenever we are training any muscle, we want to train strength and function the whole length of that muscle. So we want to make sure that that muscle is functioning well, whether it's fully contracted or fully extended. And the pelvic floor is no different. Now, the pelvic floor should be part of not only a voluntary process, we should be able to consciously control and contract it. We should also be able to consciously release it, but we also want it to be there as part of our automatic system. So when we sneeze or when we cough or when we go for a run, we should not have to consciously contract your pelvic floor every time. There should be anticipation and there should be an automatic functioning of that muscle group to support what's happening with the whole body. So with Kegels, a lot of the time, people can do that contract and lift very effectively, but they're so focused on the strength of the contraction that in between repetitions, they don't allow the muscle to release and extend all the way. And in that case, what we are training is we are sort of ingraining a tension pattern into that muscle group. We're sometimes grippy and over recruiting them, maybe in different movements. We're using the example of women who ride horses might be gripping with their inner thighs and really using a lot of recruitment in the muscles associated with the pelvic floor that create tension. But it also might just be related to your stress level. So if you do sort of that body scan of your body when you feel stressed out, you're going to find likely a place where you are a gripper. Sometimes people are chest grippers or jaw grippers, or they are stomach grippers or glute clenchers. And sometimes they are grippers in the pelvic floor. And I find this especially to be true of postpartum women because a certain awareness and focus has been put on their pelvic floors. And maybe at the same time that a stress level is high, they are also a little bit constantly worried whether or not that muscle is functioning well to begin with. So they're creating this feeling that they have to hold it all in. Right? They're creating this sensation, this awareness. And I always kind of like to point out that to a certain degree, ignorance about your pelvic floor is bliss. If you are thinking about your pelvic floor all the time, you are probably gripping it all the time. When we think about a muscle, we're often creating a sort of subconscious gripping or tension pattern in that muscle. So we want the pelvic floor to be there when we need it, and we want it to be effectively relaxed when we don't.
That's a very good point, Amy.
Yeah,
very good point.
And if you think about any other muscle in your body as well, we don't get a full contraction unless we are fully released to begin with. And the pelvic floor is no different. So let's use an example. You are about to sneeze and your bladder is pretty much full. If your pelvic floor is already tight and tense and recruited and partially contracted, when you do sneeze and you need that pelvic floor to kick in, the actual sort of effectiveness, the strength of that contraction is diminished by its already sort of spasming state. If you had been fully relaxed and sort of ready at the same time, so you're fully relaxed, but that pelvic floor has been trained to be effective at anticipating these moments, and that sneeze comes on, that contraction is going to be big and it's going to be effective. So when we talk about pelvic floors being strong or functional, strength and function are not necessarily always the same thing. We could have a woman who could lift a surfboard with her vagina, and that woman exists, right? I've seen her online. That is no guarantee that when she sneezes, she doesn't leak. The sheer strength of her pelvic floor might not necessarily indicate that her pelvic floor functions as part of a functional, coordinated whole. So when we think about Kegels, we have to think about, A, are they appropriate for us right now based on what our body is doing? B, are we effective and performing the contraction correctly? And C, are we performing and effective at the relaxation and extension of that muscle group? So Kegels are not just the squeeze and hold. Kegels are the squeeze and hold, and then an effective release. So it's so important, because I think a lot of women, a red flag goes off and they feel like their, vagina has gone bonkers or their pelvic floor has gone crazy, and they begin to be aware of it. And then they begin to think about the only thing that's been ingrained in us forever, which is, I better do some Kegels. And then they start to Kegel really aggressively, and they're focused on generating that contraction and that tension, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That woman might be creating more of a problem for herself, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to be well coached in Kegels. And in this circumstance where we're all kind of, locked in our houses, and we might not have access to the kind of care that can help us figure out if we are effectively Kegeling. So maybe you can't get to your doctor, your gynecologist, your pelvic floor physiotherapist, somebody who can do some internal work appropriately, right? Maybe what you need to do if you're a Kegler is go wash your hands, stick some fingers in your vagina and Kegel and see for yourself if you are getting a squeeze and a lift. And if you are not, then you might need more coaching from somebody who can and do that internal work, or coach effectively from the outside of your body. Or you might have to continue to work on it yourself by accessing some really good online information around pelvic floor contractions and something like that, right? So you can absolutely give yourself some biofeedback by sticking some clean fingers in your vagina and seeing by sensation on your fingers, what is happening when I do this Kegel? Am I not only contracting and lifting? Do I feel the relaxation at the end? And the other thing I always suggest is that we live in a stressful world all the time, not just right now. Time to yourself to lay on the ground, lay in bed, lay and be, and do that body scan. Release the tension in your forehead, release it from your jaw, go down the body. And then at the end, can you release more tension in your pelvic floor? You can do this with breath. When you inhale, nice and deep through the nose. You should feel your rib cage expand to the sides, and you should feel your pelvic floor let down. You're not pushing it down, you're letting it drop. When you exhale through the mouth, especially if you have a small aperture, so kind of pursed lips, and you can even give it a sound like a sort of sound. I don't know how effectively you heard that on the recording, but if you can do that pursed lip breathing on the exhale, you can feel how your pelvic floor naturally engages and recoils back to that starting position. And you can manipulate this. If you are feeling that movement, can you inhale and let the pelvic floor drop? Can you hold it there in the dropped position through your exhale? And then on the next inhale, can you allow it to drop further, right? Because one of the problems with the pelvic floor is a lot of women don't have the tools or the sensation to understand when they are relaxed. A lot of women are like, but I feel totally relaxed.
Exactly.
And you're like, honey, you are tenser than tense right now, right? I mean, I've gone to a pelvic floor physiotherapist and she's like, okay, now relax. And I was like, I am laying on a beach. I am relaxed right now. And she goes, you're not. You're actually in about a 30% contraction right now, but you feel released. So using that breath, getting that movement, noticing the movement of the pelvic floor and seeing if you can use breath to let it go more. If you're a yogi, you might be sort of used to this. Yoga practitioners, you kind of exhale into the movement and see if you can just melt into the movement a little bit more. It's not unlike that with the pelvic floor, but we do it on the inhale with the pelvic floor. Mm. And that's just because the natural state of our breathing pattern is we have an increase in volume in our bodies during an inhale because our lungs expand and our diaphragm moves down to press further into our pelvic cavity. And we accommodate that change in pressure by letting down the pelvic floor. And then when we exhale, we now have a change in the pressure management system, and the pelvic floor can recoil or just return to that higher resting state. So understanding even just the connection of pelvic floor and breath is a great place to start when the world goes mad or you're feeling tense, or even just, you know, like I said, you might not feel tense. Just do it anyway, because even if you're not feeling tense, you might be, right?
Yeah. Oh, you've given us some really interesting homework to do, Amy, with the clean fingers and the breathing. I mean, you could do the breathing anywhere, but you might need a little bit of me time in order to actually do the clean finger homework.
Yeah. Do that in your own space when children aren't banging on the door.
Yeah, exactly.
My own experience, when your children are yelling, "Mom, I need a snack," is not the time to do that. I can just like take 30 seconds and give you my favorite technique. And I actually learned this when I was doing my doula training, and relaxing a baby out of your body is connected to this as well, right? It's the ability to relax your body. But the very quick and very easy meditation that she gave was to have you lay down or sit comfortably, be in a comfortable rested position, and on the exhale, you're saying let, and on the inhale, you're saying go. And that go, I want it to be like a deep, rumbly, low voice, Barry White kind of situation, right? I want you to be using vocalization to relax the body. So let on the inhale, go on the exhale. And for some people, they don't actually need to vocalize. Hearing it in their mind's eye or their mind's ear is enough. But if you can actually vocalize it, it does kind of help. So let go. But the let is the exhale. The go is the inhale. And it's, which seems counterintuitive. If you do it, you feel like you're letting air out on the go. Anyway, just trust me on this.
I'm going to have to practice that one, Amy.
You're going to have to practice it. Yeah, like
I'm
going
to have to listen to this again and practice that.
Yeah, because you want to be able to like use breath as you go. And the let is that like contract up. The go is the let go, right? Now, if your brain can't wrap yourself around this and you need to reverse it, then do it if it's effective. But but it's just that let go and that constant stream has a lot of meditative quality to it. It uses vocalization, which I love. It uses breathing, which I love. And it's dead simple. So, you know, it's just a great little meditation.
And something that, you know, can be really great for us to repeat over and over again.
Yeah, just let
let go. Oh, I love that. So now, if a woman is experiencing the three Ps are kind of doing these things, but doesn't make a difference. And especially, you know, with women where were working with them again before the pandemic at the gym, if they were experiencing the three Ps, would be the next step to get assessment by doctor or gynecologist or pelvic floor physiotherapist? And at what point when would you choose between those three?
Right. So there are definite differences between the three. Family doctors are brilliant, but they might not have a ton of specificity around, you know, what's happening in and around the pelvis, specifically sort of the vagina. Gynecologists are amazing, but often those appointments run sort of 10, 15, 20 minutes max, and there's just a limit to the amount of time and assessment they can give you. So a pelvic health physiotherapist, if you go and see one and access one, the first time you see them, there's going to be a lot of chat about what you are feeling and experiencing, what your history is, what your physical experience has been. And then likely, if you consent and are comfortable, they're going to do quite a lengthy internal assessment. So with a physician, the internal assessment might be, you know, very, very quick. I find whenever I have internal work done with my doctor or gynecologist, it's really like 2 minutes or under. Kind of thing. It's a really quick experience.
Yeah.
And they're usually looking for very specific things that they can address medically, right? But a pelvic health physiotherapist is not just looking at that. They are also looking at, am I feeling scar tissue that might impact this person? Is my touch generating a sensation or effect that is noxious? So is my touch generating a pain response? Is my touch generating a tension response? Can I feel how the muscles are functioning when I ask this client or patient to do some pelvic floor contractions, or when I ask them to breathe deeply, or when I ask them to relax, right? So they're assessing not just some of the more sort of medicalized end of things, right? If a pelvic health physiotherapist sees a very clear medical red flag, they're going to refer you directly to that doctor or physician. But they are also looking at the whole system as it functions. They're watching you breathe. They're seeing if your transverse abdominals are recruited when you do certain movements. They're seeing if things they're doing are generating tension in your back. They're seeing if anything with their internal assessment with fingers, you know, in your vagina or sometimes, you know, in other orifices, if that's generating information that can help them better understand how your system is working in movement, in contraction as a whole. So it's definitely a more nuanced experience. When I see people and they're getting red flags, first of all, 100% of the time, I'm going to refer them, if possible, to a pelvic health physiotherapist. I think that those therapists are so important. They are so much more capable and able to do the kind of assessment that as a fitness professional, I can't. Mm-hmm. And I just find that is a practitioner or a care provider that every person should have access to in their lives. I would recommend every human goes and has a pelvic health physiotherapy assessment at some point. Now, if you feel like you're getting a red flag and you feel like it's important for you to do it now, then I will always say that that's a really great thing to do. And that's also going to help the other practitioners in your life. So, you know, if somebody goes to a pelvic health physiotherapist and that therapist who's able to do internal assessment gets lots of really great information about that person and that body, that person can take that to their trainer. If their movement professional, you know, is somebody that is well-versed in pre- and postnatal and pelvic health, and they can work with that information to help develop that program. I love working programs that have been overseen or informed by the work of the pelvic health physiotherapist, because that is their scope. It's outside of my scope, and their ability to assess that person holistically is way beyond what I can by visually seeing how they move. I can get lots of information from the outside from looking, but I can't put my hands inside your body and understand what's happening, right?
Yeah. So, and then you can really individualize a woman's program instead of just using kind of a cookie cutter approach.
Exactly. And and I will often receive a letter or an email from that pelvic health physiotherapist saying, I have seen your client. She has consented to us sharing information. Here are my findings. Here's what I suggest we work on. And then I can work on that from a movement and lifestyle point of view. Awesome. And then that person is getting a really holistic approach, right? Mm-hmm. Because the whole body of movement and of experience of that physical body is then getting addressed. What is also getting addressed is we have to address sort of privilege here, because in North America, we don't have pelvic health physiotherapy as a free service for anybody. So you have to have access and you have to have the money to do it. Now, to spend an hour with a pelvic health physiotherapist, which is very worthwhile, is also very expensive. And to spend an hour with me, which I think is very worthwhile, is also expensive, but about half as expensive as that pelvic health physio. So if you could get them to do the stuff that they're brilliant at and then have them help guide the movement, you can take that information elsewhere and save yourself some time and money, which, you know, for a lot of women is going to make or break whether or not they can get care, right? Yeah. Because budget is a concern. So if somebody's getting red flags, definitely, I can make some suggestions. Get down on the ground, breathe, see if you can get some release, take up a meditation practice, you know, take up a glute strengthening practice, take up a good foam rolling routine, you know, something. Mm-hmm. But if that's not tackling the problem, then we move to the care professionals who can do more thorough assessment. And if the problem does not seem highly medical, I would definitely say go to that pelvic health physiotherapist first. If it seems to be muscular, musculoskeletal, it has to do with how you move, that's a great place to go. If they see any red flags, they will refer you to a medical professional. Right. But some people immediately just go to their family doctor, their gynecologist, who does a very, very quick assessment and might not be looking at how those muscles are functioning, might not be looking at how scar tissue is impacting pain, might not be doing as thorough an assessment as a pelvic health physiotherapist. And then you're kind of left feeling like, oh, well, I guess they told me I was fine, but my experience of my body right now doesn't feel fine. So best case scenario, work with a great movement coach, work with a great pelvic health physiotherapist, and work with a great doctor. Right?
Awesome. Yeah.
That's a great team. Maybe then you're also bringing in other care providers that feel meaningful to you. Maybe you've got a naturopath you love, a dietitian you love, something, right? A yoga teacher you love. But the more holistically you view the body, the more holistically you're going to create an impact.
Oh, I just love your approach, Amy. I could talk to you or listen to you talk all day.
Yeah. Kegels are one piece of a much bigger system that needs to work in coordination. And every practitioner you can think of is also one piece of a bigger system. So you have to think of it as a holistic approach. And those are the women that are going to feel really served mm-hmm. and seen and respected, and they're likely going to feel that effect, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, access as much as you can. And there are great online resources as well if you feel inhibited by budget concerns or time constraint or distance, for example. A lot of people just physically don't have physical access to the nearest care provider. So, you know, there are great online sources of info as well. I just caution people to sort of vet those online resources a little better. I can certainly speak to, you know, my faves, but, mm-hmm. But yeah, because there, as you know, the computer is full of a lot of people who say they know things yes. that don't know things.
Yes. Right? Buyer beware. And yes. Even if you're not buying, even if it's just free.
Yeah. And don't bet your vagina on YouTube, right? don't put your vagina in the hands of a random YouTube search, please. Yeah,
perfect. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you to find out about your faves, how could they be in contact with you?
Well, right now I am at home doing a lot of nothing and I'm very happy to answer emails. So one of the best ways to get in touch with me is via my email address. I love correspondence. I love questions. Please feel free to send me whatever you have if it will serve you. My email address is Amy, A-M-Y, at cultivatefitness.ca. So cultivatefitness.ca, first name Amy at cultivatefitness.ca. I'm also on Instagram, and I will say I'm not that active on social media, but cultivatefitnessyyc is my Instagram handle. I have a little bit of stuff up on there. You won't find a regular upload. I really just prefer to work one-on-one with people. I think this is one of, I just love to work with clients and understand who they are and what they're experiencing. And this is quite a personal experience of people. So I don't tend to take it, wide on the internet very often, but
for sure. It's nice to be able to connect one-on-one with people in a really real way. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll be putting that up on the show notes. So thank you for all of your wisdom, Amy. We're totally going to switch gears now to the segment of the episode where I get to share my super mom moment and my mama must have for the week. And now I'm going to share a story, but I don't know if it's a super mom moment or a mama must have, and it might be, or a mama must mess up. It might be both, because just the other day I was out for a walk with Frankie. And it was really time to go home. Like I was hungry. Mama needed some food, and she was having a blast just running around the neighborhood. And it got to a point where she just lay down on the ground on the sidewalk and was not moving. So I didn't feel like the greatest mom at the time. And so what did I think to do? Well, I, you know, her daddy was at home. So I just, you know, snapped a photo of her, texted him, come get your daughter. And then he came and met us and we went home, and she was happy to have daddy come and meet her. So I feel like that was a super mom moment in the end.
I'm in agreement. Knowing when to ask for help.
Yes.
And knowing that just because you're a mom doesn't mean you have to do it all. Right.
Yes. Oh,
love.
Thank you for reaffirming that, Amy. I feel good about that. Now, mama must have for the week. Now, especially talking with you, Amy, you know, the one thing that just keeps rolling around in my mind is I can't wait to go back to see my pelvic floor physiotherapist. So, you know, in my mind, a pelvic floor physiotherapist is absolutely a mama must have to really know what is going on down there. Like you said, like they're really the experts, and they take the time to really look at not just the structure, but the function of what's going on.
Absolutely. I mine are good friends of mine. I think they have been in my vagina more than my husband, my partner. And also I feel like the most information I've ever gotten about my own body happened through pelvic floor physio.
Awesome.
So I completely agree.
Awesome. And now, other than that, you were telling me a really interesting story before we started recording about kind of your mama must have right now. That is maybe a little bit more accessible for people than a pelvic floor physiotherapist right now.
For sure. My mama must have can come from Shoppers Drug Mart, the drugstore, or it can come from Amazon. So, you know, this is dead simple. And I was telling you, Tony, that I didn't really realize how much I loved this item until I broke mine last week and had to wait for my Amazon order to come in. But a hand mirror is my mama must have. Because I really want people, myself included, to be able to look and see and appreciate their vulvas. You can get a lot of information by looking at your vulva. And as I was saying to you, it's not just to make sure that, you know, if you choose to remove hair, that process is going okay. That if you feel a bump, that you can get a visual of that and see if you need to go and get some care. But it's also, you can get a lot of information about your pelvic function by looking at your vulva, right? Are you seeing bulges and tissue that you are not used to seeing that shouldn't be there? When you do a pelvic floor contraction and you're looking in a hand mirror at your own vulva, can you see your vagina, your vaginal opening come together and lift up? So that's a really good visual cue about the effectiveness of your Kegel. And when you do let go of that contraction, do you see your vulva sort of blossom again? Right? So a hand mirror is indispensable for me. I don't want to tell you all that I'm constantly looking at my vulva in a mirror, but I might be constantly looking at my vulva in a mirror.
When you have free time.
Yes. And if I can just give a plug to a great friend, I know a really wonderful woman who does this work as well in the fitness world, and she specifically does a lot of work with women with pelvic organ prolapse. And she took on a blog post that she called Private's Investigator, where she encouraged everybody to really take a detailed look at their vulva and understand what they were seeing. Because I'm, you know, spoiler alert, if you give birth to a baby through your vagina, it won't look the same after, right?
Yep.
It'll change. And how do you make sense of those changes and the things that you are seeing? So, you know, her name is Haley Shevner, and she has a wonderful blog called Pop Uplifting and a wonderful post called Private's Investigator. It's not for the faint of heart, my friends. There's a lot of vulvas on that page that are very just in your face. So don't be searching this up online when your, you know, child is sitting next to you on the couch. But if you're curious about what postpartum vulvas look like and what you are looking at when you look at yours, that is a great breakdown. And it all comes hot on the heels of looking down there yourself with your hand mirror and getting to know your own vulva and understanding what your tissues look like and giving you a little bit of information so that if something changes, you're going to identify it for yourself. Hand mirrors. Brilliant.
Love thing. It. And I'm definitely going to be posting that blog on the show notes too, because that sounds like an amazing read and an amazing resource for women. Because often, I mean, I even admit I don't look at my vulva very often, and I don't even necessarily compare mine to other women because there really is a lot of variety out there.
Their vulvas come in all wonderful shapes, sizes, colors. You know, like all of us are shaped differently. And that is great because the vulvas that we are able to see in the world are usually the vulvas that have been presented to us through, you know, porn or different things like that. And those vulvas are selected for a particular appearance. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to understand what, you know, your everyday lady vulva is going to look like, and that there's this diversity to it that we can appreciate. It doesn't have to look a certain way, but also from a health standpoint, understanding what of our body we are seeing. And a classic example of this is, you know, after you have a baby, if you took that hand mirror and looked, you might be seeing a more open introitus, a more open vagina. And because that vagina is a little more open, you might be seeing tissue you didn't used to see. And we have these beautiful sort of ruffles and ridges inside our vulvas. And, you know, a lot of the time I hear women saying, you know, I think something's coming out of me that shouldn't be, or I think I see something that's wrong. And what they might be seeing is natural sort of vaginal rugae or like hemorrhoidal remnant. They might be seeing something that they just didn't used to see, and understanding that and understanding mm-hmm. your vulva is a process of being able to accept it, understand its beauty and diversity, but also understand what you are looking at from a health monitoring standpoint. Hand mirrors are the best. If you go to that blog post, my vulva is on that blog post. I contributed. Nice. Hilarious story. My husband's banging on the door of the bathroom going, "Are you okay? You've been in there for a long time." And I yell back, as I do, "I'm just trying to get a couple of good pictures of my vulva." And my partner, knowing me as he does, said, "Well, do you need me to come in? Like, I'll, do you need me to do it?" And I said, "No, I just need a selfie stick." And it was a whole process. And then after I contributed to this blog post to sort of, you know, contribute to Haley's project, my husband kind of said to me, "And what you are not seeing is that I have very bright red hair." He said, "You probably told all your clients that you're doing this, right?" Yeah. And he said, "Did any other ginger women participate?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Okay, well."
No identifiers at all.
You're not as anonymous as you think you are, my friends.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but brilliant that people in the world are doing that and shedding light on these things. So
I love it. Oh my goodness. Thank you for sharing that, Amy. Hand mirror and that blog. Mirror. Perfect. Well,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Amy. And thanks all of you for joining us out there. I hope you got a lot out of this episode. I know I did. You can find the show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. And we would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and a 5-star rating, especially if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. So, thanks for joining us. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll see you again soon. Have a great week.